Great music. Really appreciate it, Jerry. Imagine this. You've been planning this trip for months. You're thrilled. You finally made it to the Rockies. And today, you're on this special trail that you've been planning to hike. You've been on the move for hours now. You love the aspens and the big sky. Mariposa lilies and wild iris are glorious. You just saw two bighorn sheep banging at each other. You're not sure if they're in a turf battle or having fun. It seems like a little of both. And you're getting a good sweat, and this is just a great experience. And now you're coming to the summit of the trail where you can see distant peaks, and below there is a shimmering lake. And then 20 yards away from you, somebody takes a cell phone call. Hello? Frank, I was just about to call you, man. It's unbelievable here. Yeah, I'm really sorry you couldn't come. It's prettier than the pictures, man. I know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, listen, I'm going to send you a picture on Facebook. I'm not sure if the connection's going to work, but I'm going to send you a picture on Facebook. Look at my account. Having quiet can be so precious. And sometimes we just do not get enough when we really need it. In the Hebrew Bible, Job struggles mightily. He's been a good worker, a good neighbor, husband, and father in his heart. He's searched his history, and he knows with clarity. He's lived with integrity. But now he is suffering through tragedies. His livestock is struck and burned to the ground by lightning. A desert wind blows down his house and kills his daughters and sons. And he is angry. And he's confronting God with these questions. God, why is this happening? I thought you were a fair God. This is not right. And while he's waiting for an answer, Job's friends start talking incessantly. Listen, you got to know, God always has a plan, and God has a reason, and God, we don't always understand, but you can't question God, Job, and we think you should calm down. And Job says, listen, hey. Friends, if only you would keep silent right now, that would be showing some wisdom. If you want to help me right now, please give me some quiet. I read a story about a man reflecting on his experience that he and his wife had during her final days of living. And he says, I'm not really sure how we got by. It was 1 hour at a time. But there at my wife's bedside, words seemed hollow. Cries seemed powerless. And the strongest, most powerful reality that we could find was silence. We realized that if we spent some quiet together, we could really be there for each other. The spiritual theme of the month is vision. Andy Stanley is a minister who says, a vision is born of the soul of a man or a woman who is consumed with the tension between what is and what could be. A vision forms in the heart of those who are dissatisfied with the status quo. Vision carries a moral conviction and urgency. It's a clear mental picture of what could be, fueled by a passion for what should be. And what I am saying this morning is that when we take time for quiet in our lives, quiet creates opportunities to birth and live out visions. Well, that makes things a little tricky. Because for many of us, silence is a bit too hard to come by. and too infrequent to take advantage of. Too many times when we are in those sacred communions with nature, they're broken. Somebody talking on a cell phone or a powerboat on this lake. There shouldn't be powerboats on this lake. Too many times when we're trying to listen to our souls, our friends, our neighbors, our family members, talk too much. They don't mean bad. Many times, though, it is we ourselves who make the noise, impeding our listening. In those most important times, like accompanying a loved one in dying, we are blessed when we know that silence is golden, and when we find a way to give each other that gift. But we can also use quiet and so many other everyday and even mundane parts of our living for many benefits, including creating space to create a compelling, urgent vision for how our lives can be. And there are many reasons why it's hard to find this. Our society is noisy many times for good reasons. During the heat wave, if you were walking outside and listening, it'd be all the humming of all the air conditioners trying to make it happen. There's always fans are going right now. True quiet in our society for good reason. I'm glad the fans are here. But true quiet is hard to come by. But there are cultural reasons why it's hard to find as well. One is that we are socialized to talk a lot. Unitarians definitely fall into this category. Great psychologist Carl Jung was pivotal in understanding some of the dynamics at play. In 1921, Jung developed a fuller understanding of the extrovert and introvert character types that describe some of our natural orientations toward this. Introverts draw energy from within, the inner world of thought and feelings. Extroverts draw energy from without, the life of people and activities. And there's no such thing as a pure extrovert or an introvert. Jung said that person would be purely insane. But we all have a mix, and we have tendencies towards one or the other. Jung saw introverts, people who like the interior life, as educators and promoters of culture. He said those are the folks that show us the value of an interior life, which is so painfully wanting and lacking in our civilization. Currently, so I'm basing a lot of my comments on a book called Quiet by Susan Cain. It's an excellent book on a predominantly favoring extrovert society that we live in and the detriments of that to us all. Approximately one-third of Americans are introverts, yet we really stigmatize them in many ways and put them down, and we overvalue the extrovert ideal, which includes being gregarious and highly social. So this bias starts so young. Parents apologize. Oh, my child's really being shy today. Parents and teachers often collaborate, focusing on getting their kids out of their shell. Well, maybe Timmy doesn't need to come out of his shell. Maybe Timmy's having a beautiful interior life experience that we should support and appreciate. Susan Cain believes that the historic high mark for this bias against introverts came after World War II. Educators and well-meaning parents agreed quiet was unacceptable. But you can see this in formal pedagogy materials. And gregariousness was the ideal for boys and girls. Children were discouraged many times from solitary or serious hobbies like classical music. Sophie, you're not really going to play the violin seriously. You're going to be in your room 4 hours a day by yourself. You got to socialize with your friends, Sophie. In the 1950s, the Harvard provost said, "We find little use for the brilliant introvert." The Harvard provost, direct quote. And to this day, the Harvard Business School, which I think is representative of a lot of tacit ways of doing things, they are open and admitting that a top goal for them is to change quiet thinkers into talkers. And that's not just a capricious goal. Their studies show job placement, rising up through the corporate ladder. If people have high competency in verbal fluency and sociability, they're going to get great jobs and keep going up the ladder. That's not surprising. The problem is that there are a lot of other studies that show that this leads too many organizations to bad process and bad ideas and bad ways of operating. So listen to this example from the Harvard Business School. Every year they throw their freshmen together and have a role-playing game, subarctic survival situation. Okay, groups of six, here's your situation, figure out how you're going to survive and get out. One young guy in the group had lots of experience in wilderness survival. He was in his group and he softly articulated a brilliant plan for the group to survive and get out. But there was a woman in the group who was louder, more gregarious, and a little more assertive, and they picked her idea, which was nowhere near as good to give them chances. And we're not surprised. Studies confirm that on the whole, talkers do not have better ideas than quiet people. Although, actually, a lot of people think the contrary. If you can talk a good game, a lot of people think, oh, yeah, he knows what he's doing. Introverts, it turns out, are great leaders. If you have a functional group, the person who knows quiet, oftentimes you need some humility and a good drive, can help draw out best ideas and get the group to a best idea to go forward. So maybe the minister needs to talk a little less in the meetings. No, I'm trying. I'm growing. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Here's some evidence. Leaders and anybody, people who are focused on the inner world are credited with the following visions and implementing them. Theory of gravity, theory of relativity, Yeats' The Second Coming, Chopin's Nocturnes, Proust in Search of Lost Time, Peter Pan, The Cat in the Hat, Charlie Brown, Harry Potter, and Google. All come from quiet inner people. But you don't have to be focusing on some big, great breakthrough invention or piece of art that the whole world's going to love to have this stuff matter. Here's a story about Greg and Emily, a married couple. Experience a lot of stress in their relationship around Friday night dinner parties. Greg is in the music industry. Before he was married and when he got married, Greg has Friday night dinner parties every Friday night. And the people in the business and the neighbors come together for drinks and food and talking and listen to the greatest tunes. And he always looked forward to this. Emily is quiet. And she needs time after work to refuel. She definitely needs time after the work week to refuel. So she found these things difficult and draining. And neither of them could really understand the other's perspective. They kept talking, yeah, but. Eventually, they found a compromise, having two dinner parties a month, buffet style. Now, I think Emily gave up a lot to say two dinner parties a month. That's a big compromise. But this allowed her to operate more quietly on the edges of the gathering, have more quiet, deeper one-on-one conversations. And then Greg could still socialize, have some spotlight, schmooze, do his thing. Many of us are on a journey to try and balance out. A lot of times health for a person has good extrovert and introvert. And I grew up, especially in high school, and in my 20s, I was very extroverted, and it was not really healthy or productive for me or the people around me. And I've been on a journey, and now I can honestly say I deeply cherish alone time, reading a novel, running by myself, taking a bath when it's not 100 degrees. And I think the church maybe could benefit from looking more explicitly at how we not only do our business and make our meetings better so that everybody is really getting a chance to talk and somebody doesn't talk three times before someone else talks at all, but also maybe we should do a better job at looking at our programming. This would be returning to our roots, because I was thinking about this. Before the extrovert ideal became so dominant in the 1900s, in the 1800s, the Unitarians were very strong in what I think was the introvert ideal. Wordsworth and Thoreau were the icons of this kind of stuff, but the Unitarians were proclaiming and experiencing the importance, wandering the countryside, alone, contemplating nature and life, maybe writing down a few verses. And I think maybe we need to be reclaiming some of our roots in our programming. Maybe more of us can take advantage of the Sunday morning meditation time that we have. Or build, maybe we need a spiritual, but you know, we have small group ministry, 12 people get together in a circle and talk. Maybe we need a spiritual buddy program where two or three people get together to take a walk and talk or not. Just be together. So let's be thinking about that. Quiet creates space for the birthing and living of a vision. In the Hebrew Bible, the phrase Hester Panim is 30 times. That's hiding your face and listening, just listening. Elijah was at the face of the cave, listening. Jesus did not shout. In the revelation of the divine through him, it was soft spoken, and a lot of times folks had to hush, lean in, listen for that message coming to you. We have a lot of people with divine wisdom among us. Maybe we need to just lean in a little bit more and give each other the gift of a little more quiet. Martin Buber was an essential Jewish theologian, talked about the I-thou relationship with the holy, my relationship with the holy, your relationship with the holy. And in that context, Buber said, words serve only to mute gestures, pointing to the irreducible, ineffable dimensions where God subsists. If I'm trying to connect with the holy or God or the sacred, something really important to my conscience and our world, and I'm just jabber, 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 I might really have less potential than if we just all sit in quiet and meditate. What are our hearts telling us right now? It's not easy. A lot of times it's not comfortable, but when you stick with it, you really feel life. The people where the woman was dying, the couple, they gave each other the gift of silence. And that gave them the vision. This is how we want to be in her last hours. The next time you go on a nature walk, or any of us go on a nature walk, let's be careful with our cell phones. Many groups, including us, where let's find ways to be quiet and listen to each other. What about you? If you take the time and be quiet, is there something inside of you that's calling you to solve an equation or paint a painting or create a cartoon character who can make us laugh? What about us? How can we give each other the gift of being quiet and knowing how do we live out this mission, building beloved community with compassion, service, and empowerment? Listen, somebody is going to have a really great vision. Let's join together and sing hymn 1007, found in the Teal hymnal, There is a River Flowing in My Soul.